down or it's spelled the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again, as Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this segment of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Well, you know, it's been a tremendous first 2 hours. Of course, Greg Jackson dropped a by. And folks, if you haven't read or gotten your copy of 40 Things to Teach Your Children Before You Die, order it off Amazon because, you know, we want to push that to number one. And I know how that works. You know, it's my book, Stained by Blood, was in the top 100 of its genre of all books on Amazon for about 30 seconds. But
if there's a deserving book, it's Greg Jackson's
book.
It is.
Before we get back to the globalization initiatives that are taking place right as we speak and dissecting what's going on, it may sound boring, but hold fast, because we're going to connect it all at the end. But before we get back into that, folks, June. Isn't June a time of celebration? You've got Father's Day. You've got graduations taking place. You've got summer officially beginning. And we as Christians, we follow the Word of God. We follow the Bible. And we know God has created the heavens, math, the stars, all for good, all for our use. It only takes satanic initiatives, satanic ideology, Luciferians, to pervert the Word of God, the intent of God. Well, listen to this, folks. This appeared... Today, in today's edition of LA Weekly, Los Angeles Weekly, LA Weekly, Satanists plan to celebrate 6/6/16 in Los Angeles. The Satanic Temple of Los Angeles scheduled festivities for a revered day in the diabolic community. 3 sixes, 6/6/16. You can also put that into, so the 16 into a 7 in occult numerology, and then 2016, what does that add up to? That's a 9, which is the 3 times multiplication of Satan's favorite number, 3. But anyway, the Satanic Temple of Los Angeles. It's got 12 members. They're heading to Lancaster, California on June 6th to take part in a satanic ritual. In fact, they issued a press release. The schedule is secret, but the appearances will be designed to raise awareness of the satanic religion. Now here's what we need to really focus in on. It doesn't matter if you... See, people get so hung up on this. Oh, well, that's just BS. Well, no, it's not. Because it goes to all religions of the world. If you go back into Egypt and the ancient world, many religions they worshipped. Numerous gods, small g. But when you really take it to take it down to the bare bones, paganistic, Luciferian worship, satanic worship, Satan worship. If you don't think, folks, if you don't think that rituals are taking place in your community, and I don't care whether you live in Peoria, Illinois, or Podunk, Kansas, or Nashua, New Hampshire, or Tampa, Florida, it doesn't matter where you live, satanic rituals are taking place all the time. Mm-hmm. Okay, now it doesn't matter if you think it's all baloney, because it's not. But the members of the occult societies have a certain belief, and they believe in the power. Just ask Russ Dizdar. Listen to Russ Dizdar right here on the Global Star Radio Network. Listen to him talk about satanic rituals. In my book, again, shameless plug for Stained by Blood, which is available on stainedbyblood.com or through Amazon. If you want a signed copy, just go to stainedbyblood.com and look on the right-hand side. Or Amazon, you can get an unsigned copy. But Kindle copy. Shameless plug ends. Anyway, the reason I brought all of that up is because I did not realize when I was working a murder case the importance of other people's belief systems and how they believe in satanic rituals and how much satanic ritual abuse is taking place despite the denials of the FBI. Well, here it is, FBI, right in your face. Right in your face, the satanic rituals are going to take place on 6/6/16. But this is kind of a diversion from the actual summer equinox when the real rituals take place. But listen to what they're doing here, real quick. This show's got a lot more to get into. But the pentagram, it's a star with 5 points. They're using GPS technology. They're going to place the 5 points of the pentagram so that the pentagram will encompass the entire city of Lancaster, California. In fact, in their press release, which I have here, right here, from the Satanic Temple of Los Angeles, their website, what they're saying is, we are going to envelop your city with the pentagram. When all of the 5 points are in place, the pentagram is completed. Drawing the symbol around your city represents a solemn promise from us, the Satanic Temple of Los Angeles. We will stand with the good people of the city of Lancaster and struggle for our constitutional right to individual liberty, freedom of expression, and the separation of church and state in your community. To that, folks, I say, damn you. Well, I guess they're damning themselves. Members also plan to deliver their Bible, the Satanic Bible, the seven tenets, to Lancaster city leaders. Now, if I was, let me give you a hypothetical. If I was a leader in the city of Lancaster, California, and a guy came up to me to hand me the seven tenets, their Satanic Bible, they might have a hard time. They might need a surgeon to take it out of the orifice, which I would put it in. So much for my tolerance of satanic rituals. But I find it interesting, and Joe pointed this out in this LA Weekly article, where it says, if you're looking for ill behavior, you'll probably be better off at a Donald Trump rally. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
But another interesting aspect of this, this sect, SECT, has roots at Harvard and Cambridge.
Yeah, they make it a point to say these are not just, you know, your run-of-the-mill, you know, religious belief people. This is a group consolidated of intellectuals from Ivy League institutions that they say they stand up for human rights, civil rights, social and political justice on all levels.
Now, think of it this way, too. This author in this LA Weekly column, Dennis Romero, makes it a point to say the group once had a barbecue where a Trump pinata was bashed. This, according to the group leader, Nguyen, or N-G-U-Y-E-N. Obviously, it's a Vietnamese name.
Yeah.
The leader of this is...
And he said that was downright civil and just.
Right. But the commentary by this author, Romero, of LA Weekly, his closing statement right before 30, you know, right before the 30 mark. For writers, you know what I'm talking about. But yawn, sounds like a real riot. At least the music's cool. You see, this is the disjointed... This is the disjointed... lackadaisical stuff, position that is causing this country and Christians as well to blow this off. Don't blow this off. Don't underestimate the importance of this, because at the core of this, just as Joe is talking about the globalization and the various aspects of the globalization with smart cities and how all of these dots connect, this golden thread of the satanic Luciferian ideology is behind all of it. Because at the root of this, the satanic aspect of this, people are just, they're not understanding that we are being overtaken.
That's right. And it's not only in the satanic religion of this religion is, the satanic temple, Satanism. But listen to this. You talked about, this is from October 9th, 2015.
Right.
In Kansas.
Yeah.
Last October, in the Wichita State University, a group of Muslims took over a Christian chapel inside the university of this majority Christian school. The Muslims gained control of the Christian prayer area with the help of administrators from Wichita State University.
Whoa!
Who, in May of 2014, decided to make the university's chapel faith neutral to accommodate Muslim students. University officials ordered workers to remove all the pews and altars inside the Harvey D. Grace Memorial Chapel. Muslim prayer rugs and portable chairs were then brought inside.
Huh.
But why is that important today? We see this interfaith push from the Pope.
Yes.
Now, the world's first lesbian bishop of a major Christian denomination, Eva Brun, of the Lutheran Church of Sweden, is calling for the removal of crosses and other Christian symbols at the Siemens Church in Freeport so that visiting foreign sailors practicing other religions like Islam will not be offended. A Stockholm-based news outlet, SVT.se.
But wait, didn't George Bush tell us that Islam and Christianity, we worship the same God?
That's what he said, but he said most of what he said was an outright lie or an error in common sense on his part.
So the bumper sticker, if you're listening to this program and you got a coexist bumper sticker on your bumper, apparently, are you listening to the wrong program? But anyway, that just negates a coexist at its face. Anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, we see this. There was an elderly woman in London. I believe it was London. I saw the headline this morning.
Okay.
That was stripped naked in the street by 300-plus Muslim mob.
Yes, Yes.
And paraded down the street nude. There's also talk of Paris burning. And now Pope Francis, to address UAE's the Islamic Council to improve relations between Christians and Muslims at the United Arab Emirates. Pope Francis has been invited to address the United Arab Emirates Islamic Council in efforts to improve relations between Christians and Muslims. A series of talks attended by the United Arab Emirates Muslim Council of Elders has been organized to build bridges between the two religions. Vatican officials suggested the pontiff could be invited to speak at the next round of talks, which will take place in Cairo or the Vatican.
Oh, man.
Al Nuami, chairman of the UAE Islamic Council, said there is a desire from the Holy See to correct the image of Islam and Muslims in Christian society. He suggests this was seen when the Pope welcomed Dr. Ahmed El-Tayyib to the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar to the Vatican. Francis was photographed embracing the senior Islamic cleric before speaking privately to him in his office. Usually the Pope does not receive any guests in his office on his own. He always has the cardinal and other officials seated on the side, said Al Nuami. The gesture of hospitality was accompanied by the Pope awarding the Grand Imam with the Medal of Peace.
There you go.
These things would not have happened 2 years ago, Al Nuami said. The latest round of interfaith talks were held in Paris and attended by Sunni and Shia Muslims, as well as Vatican representatives. After the talks, leaders of faith visited the Bakatan Theater and nearby cafe, both targets of terrorist attacks last November. El-Taybalad, brought a wreath and prayed for the victims of the terror attack. He wrote a note alongside the bouquet.
Right.
And it goes on to say that we have great hope that the free French, peaceful, lively people will be able to overcome this tragedy, and we ask Allah to protect you from all this evil, he concluded. Now that is today from from ChristianToday.com. Again, the Pope is going to he's going to have a meeting with the leaders of the United Arab Emirates elders, either in Cairo or the Vatican, to speak in a meeting with them as part of interfaith.
If you are a Catholic and you're okay with this, then I would urge you to reexamine your Christian faith, because this is not correct, in my view anyway. Okay, in any way. This is not mere coexistence. This is not, as they used to say, of course, during the Cold War, peaceful coexistence. This is about merging of the faiths into a single world religion at the end of the day. Now, it is so important to re-expose the tactics, as we are trying to do here, and help people to understand what's taking place. Satanism, by the way, does play a very key role in this, and it is again in the mosaic of this one world religion. Satanism is the thread that holds together all of these little pieces. But let me move on, because I'm going to give you ample time to get through what you're talking about the globalist agenda. I want everyone to know that every year, just so people know, every year, the Senate, they issue an intelligence authorization. They pass this intelligence bill, and they do so in secret. Of course, now it will be passed, and you're not hearing about this anywhere, really. Every year the Senate, during their annual intelligence authorization, they pass a bill. For example, the Patriot Act, NDAA, all of these things combined, it's through the Senate that this becomes law. Well, guess what? There was a provision here this past week during the Senate's annual intelligence authorization, the text of which is secret. You can't read it. it's a law that's being passed. But a provision was snuck in that would give the FBI the ability to demand individuals' email data and web surfing history from their ISPs without warrant and with in complete secrecy. So in other words, you could be the target of an FBI investigation. And unless your name is Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton, you don't get a free pass. The change would expand the reach of the FBI's already highly controversial national security letters. Now, bear in mind, the FBI right now is currently allowed to get certain types of information with national security letters. Examples such as information about the name, the address, call data associated with the phone number, we'll say, or details about a bank account. The FBI can get that. And since 2008, the FBI has not been allowed to use national security letters to demand electronic communication transactional records, meaning email subject lines and other metadata, or even the websites visited. Now, that doesn't mean they're not doing it, but it's just not legal for them to do it. It's not codified or codified. And tomorrow, when Ted Brewer joins us, we're going to be talking about this as well. But see, the bill passed the Senate Intelligence Committee this past Tuesday with this provision in it. And once more, just to be clear on this, the provision is this, and it's secret. It would give the FBI the ability to demand your email data, your web surfing history from your web internet or internet service provider without any warrant. No warrants necessary, and no one's going to tell you. Okay, that's no. No. There was one person who said, no, we can't do this. That was Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon. Blow me away. He wrote in a statement that one of the bill's provisions would allow any FBI field office to demand email records without a court order, which is a major expansion of the federal surveillance powers. Well, count on it, folks. Your entire life. You might as well write your social security number, your date of birth, and all of your secrets, all of your passwords, all of your bank information on the back of a postcard, or publish it to Facebook because...
Well, listen to this.
Here it is.
You know, tied into what you're talking
about.
There
you go. Okay, go ahead.
From the National Telecommunications and Information Administration was just released a paper, a guidance... kind of like the transgender bathroom school guidances.
Significant guidance.
Benefits, challenges, potential roles for the government in fostering the advancement of the Internet of Things. And in the summary, it says, recognizing the vital importance of the Internet to U.S. innovation, prosperity, civic and cultural life, the Department of Commerce has made a top priority to encourage growth of the digital economy and to ensure that the Internet remains an open platform for innovation. Thus, as part of the Department's Digital Economic Agenda, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration is initiating an inquiry regarding the Internet of Things, a review of the current technological and political landscape.
So, okay, just to be clear, though, the Internet of Things, I mean, we need to get definitions
down here. The Internet of Things is... a public-private partnership. Basically, the Internet of Things is using technology to connect everything.
All right.
To everything else.
So from an electric meter to
electric meters, from
to healthcare,
I mean. Databases to economics. I mean, why in this, as they say, you know, what they have here from the Federal Health IT Strategic Plan 2015 to 2020, they say they have a collective efforts of 35-plus federal agencies to modernize health IT infrastructure to support the use of electronic health information, for a multitude of purposes. The Health IT strategic plan sets 5-year missions for 1, high quality care, 2, lower costs, 3, healthy population, 4, engaging people, and 5, a global health framework. They want this series of principles to be what they focus on value, to be person-centered, respecting individual preference, build a culture of electronic health information access and use.
Right.
The federal health partners that use and influence health IT are committed to work in concert to achieve the goals and objectives that support this national vision. Partners will hold themselves publicly accountable and work with stakeholders to access progress as the health IT infrastructure advances the new health and technology needs that arise. Now, what are these new health and... I mean, we have the department's digital economy agenda wrapped up in this Internet of Things, as well as the public health safety. Now, what is the digital agenda? The Commerce Department's digital economy agenda has rolled out an agency-wide economic agenda to ensure America's businesses and consumers thrive at a time of rapid technological change and global competition. It goes on to say the department's 12 bureaus, 47,000 employees located in all 50 states and 86 countries are behind the department's innovative agenda and data initiatives. The digital economy agenda is designed to create a coordinated, strategic, department-wide program of work to support industry and consumers and the transformative power of the Internet and other digital technology.
Okay. I mean, let's kind of distill it down in the digestible chunks here.
Okay, on the health end.
All right.
The FDA is spearheading the effort to protect public health. While they say not imposing unnecessary restrictions or actions from citizens, yet this level of new standards of precision medicine and tracking and inventory control has to be rolled out. The industry is exploring a variety of measures, but one of these is RFID technology,
right,
radio frequency identification. They say it offers unique benefits and advantages. It includes the applicability, efficiency in achieving the required supply chain, precision, minimal associated labor, and reduced likelihood of human error. Most people understand RFID. The scope of its application here requires further elaboration. The foot soldier in RFID is the chip or a tag. Generally, it's a small device that can transmit stored information with an internal power source.
And folks, you all are going, if you have a debit card from your bank, you all are going to, if you haven't already been converted into a card with a chip, it will be in your near future. Okay, the chip is a critical component into all things digital now.
Yeah.
From your driver's license to your passport to your bank card. That's important. Just so you understand that.
It says this is the final element needed. You have the tag.
Right.
And a transmitter. And you have the user. And the Internet of Things is connecting everything to the Internet. This is why they're expanding broadband and Wi-Fi technologies. If you go through the Smart Cities Initiative, they list 10 and then 25 cities where they are going to increase the ability and the increase the internet free citywide,
right?
And they are transforming every area they possibly can, from the behavioral changes to social changes to motivational support. And they say that the need for significant healthcare transformation has been recognized by a number of organizations, including the president.
So, okay,
and his council of advisors on science and technology. Now
we're still good. We're okay, but we need to kind of hone this down into digestible, understandable parts, because to me right now,
okay,
this is like really unclear. Not your fault, but it's unclear to me. What are we getting at here?
What we're getting at here is that there is a new healthcare system.
Right.
That is based around collaborative efforts of international organizations that are seeking to consolidate medicine, economics, behavior.
So this is a globalization of healthcare.
It's a globalization, of healthcare, of the economy, of behavior.
Wait.
Tracking from implementing the RFID device to a person that transmits real-time health information.
So everyone's going to be. So what you're saying is everyone's going to be assigned a chip or have a chip.
Absolutely, and they have a global identification, a global unique identification number that's already that's been passed in December of 2015.
Okay,
and it's in the law. They have the system set up to handle all the new data that will be coming. It's a large-scale database.
So
these new technologies will start off as health-centered, but they will end up being much more than that. They will encompass the economy. They will, and it messes, like you said, with your DNA. It breaks down the molecular.
Okay, wait. How can a chip in a card, we'll say, or on a wristband of somebody in the hospital, or how can that mess with your DNA?
The scientific explanation, I'm not too sure of, but the same way it will deliver medicine. Now, I don't understand how this works. Kind of like 3D printing, if you think about it. Once you receive whatever receiver they want you, they design, because remember, this is person-centric care. They want a national database for all real-time health information.
Right.
Like sensor technology or medical devices, as they call it. And machine learning technology, and they are going to, and they say for a number of reasons, for emergency use, so that, you know, and you see the reports on the news, you know, your pets have chips in their ears. What if your child got lost? Would you want a system to be able to find your child?
Now you're talking about somebody who actually has a chip implanted in them. We know that some military, high-ranking military people and also diplomats have chips in the event of kidnapping and stuff in their bodies.
So RFIDs will, people will be initially and individually tagged.
Right.
And the information, the biometric information, will be able to be accessed only by authorized personnel, but the information will start with real-time health information that will go from your doctor to you.
Okay, so stop right there, because I think, and this is probably the most information for people. If you wonder why, if you go back 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, whatever, and you wonder why Obamacare was pushed through the way it was, the answer to that is the healthcare was needed in order to set the stage for the chipping or the chipping of everyone, basically. This is not just about American healthcare. This is about the globalization of healthcare and the snagging of not just American economy, but all of the entire economy. And the chipping, the whole, all of this.
And it's not just a U.S. initiative.
No, that's what I said. It's all global. But the bottom line here with this is they had to pass this to get America on board with the globalist agenda. So the healthcare will integrate with trade. The healthcare will integrate with your wages.
Yeah, let's look just at the U.S. law. Code of Federal Regulations, Title 21, Section 801.3. It's general labeling provisions, definitions. It says automatic identification and data capture, AIDC, means any technology that conveys the unique device identifier or device identifier or device in a form that can be entered into an electronic patient record or other computer system via an automated process.
Okay.
Now, as I told you, the Food and Drug Administration's Finished device means any device or accessory to a device that is suitable for use and capable of functioning. A global, unique device identification database, which is GUDID, the acronym, means the database that serves as the repository of information to facilitate the identification of medical devices through their distribution and use. So you have the Global Unique Device Identification Database.
Okay.
Which will number every device, which will be like a security, social security number for every person. As each device has a number and is implanted into a person, that number transfers to the person and to the device. They become one and the same. They've been studying human tissues and cells, learning how to implant a device. An implantable device means a device that is intended to be placed in a surgically or naturally formed cavity of the human body. Now remember, I'm reading U.S. law here. A device is regarded as an implantable device for the purpose of this part. It is intended to remain implanted continuously unless the Commissioner of Food and Drugs determines otherwise.
Okay, so we don't lose people here. So we don't lose people. I just want to make it clear, because this is complicated. It's complex. There's many layers to it. We're talking about now some beast computer somewhere keeping track of everybody with the chip, and everyone's going to have a chip.
There will be a universal product code.
UPC.
Yep, which means the product identifier used to identify an item sold at retail in the United States.
Right.
Now, this will become global.
Have that. Okay.
And it's a mandatory.
Right.
This device identifier is a mandatory fixed portion that identifies the specific version or model of device or labeler. Now, you have a whole list of things here. They talk about the shipping. They talk about the unique device identifier. And... what's her name? Kathryn Albrecht?
Yeah.
She wrote a book on this, and she talks about how many numbers you would need to number every person in the human population today on Earth.
Okay.
And I forget how many. I think it's 32 zeros?
I'm not sure it would really...
32
would,
numbers long?
Yeah, I'm not sure it would be that necessary. I mean, you're talking...
You could number every person, every item... But like every, I talk about the Walmart system. They use RFID where if somebody buys, we'll say, a certain brand and model of TV, when it is scanned as being purchased, it automatically submits a request to refill that item in the store.
Right, which is kind of a good thing for retailers.
Right.
It's used when it's used for such purposes. All right.
But now we're talking about human beings being those TVs.
Right, okay. So human beings as a commodity.
A human step of having to physically go into the hospital storage unit and couch. It says the least burdensome approach is what they deem this as. And they say that, you know, basically your doctor can monitor your health and see potential health hazards before they happen with this system. But not only does it do that, it can track every transaction, every step you take, everything you intake into your body.
Okay,
in real time.
But how practical is this in your research? Let me just ask you this. This sounds far beyond anything capable right now that we're capable of doing.
It's not. It is here. I think the only thing they have left to do is decide how to manage the companies that have the existing technology
But why should they care? Why should any? First of all, who would superintend this? Who would manage this?
The United Nations.
Okay, all right,
is behind the whole thing. But you know, at the White House. There are whole.
But under what pretext?
35 agencies. You have healthit.gov. You have NIST. You have the FDA. You have the EPA. You have the White House's own.
But wait a second. What would cause, or what would the average guy on the street, or woman on the street, or the person, the average person,
like the Bible says, you take this chip, be part of this community, because it's an all-encompassing community. Or you have no right to buy or sell.
But see, I don't think
your information,
Joe, frankly,
and participation is needed.
Okay, so
to improve and maintain human health,
you find all of this background information. I get this. So you find all of the rules, regulations, the codes, and all this. But you can't tell me right now, even with the most cynical of people to conspiracy facts out there, even the most cynical, skeptical, if somebody approached or if the government said, "Look, you're going to need to take this chip. We need to put this chip in your armor, your head, or whatever." The blowback right now, today, I don't believe it would. I don't believe you can accomplish this.
Okay, well, let's look. Let's do this. Let's look at.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
Oh,
right?
I know, and I'm glad you're doing so. I want to pull this up. Obamacare implant. Now, this is a site that talked about. It's Obamacare facts. Obamacare implant. Obamacare microchip RFID myth. What is the truth behind the microchip implant rumor? Now, this is an article back from 2009 or 2010, I believe.
All right.
It says, when we look at the truth behind Obamacare and RFID chip myth that claims the Affordable Care Act contains mandatory microchip implants and data collection.
But it's that was a false...
That's what they say here. And okay. They say the RFID rumor is one of more persuasive Obamacare myths, but where did it come from? And it says the rumor arises from... misreading of an old version of the Affordable Health Care Act. In that old act, H.R. 3200 was an unsuccessful bill in which, on page 101, included an amendment, 519, which is a different law, the Food and Drug Cosmetic Act, which allowed for data collection to facilitate analysts of post-market safety and outcomes data from Class 2 devices. Now, a Class 2 device is very simple. It's just an RFID chip. Class 2 device. RFID transponder system for patient identification and health information. Anyway, this whole paper argues on why Obamacare does not allow for chipping of the population. But in the end, it goes on to say, implanting microchips isn't something Obamacare does or can do. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is a law that anyone can pick up and read. The law discusses data collection in general, but makes no mention of mandatory implants or data collection from those implants.
Okay.
As technology moves forward, we are sure to see a wide range of smart devices that can rely on important information like health data and data about the device itself.
Okay, stop right there, because I just got an email from George B., okay, explaining kind of right here in this, right in this exact area you're talking about. He writes this: your Ethernet device, including Wi-Fi, has a media access control address. So, humans would have their own MAC address to be integrated into the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which speaks kind of to where you're at. In this paragraph, if this was a conversation, right here. All right, so, okay, I get that. All right. Thank you, George, for that email. And so people are listening to this, and they're getting this, and they're understanding this. Thank you for that. Go on.
Now, in this RFID, Obamacare RFID myths, it says that it gives all these reasons why it's not mandatory, but they say, to summarize...
Yeah.
An early version of the law, H.R. 3200, contained wording that potentially opened a gateway for the collection of data from RFID implants. The language was dropped before the current law passed. The final version includes sections that allow for different types of electronic data collection, albeit not from a Class 2 device, such as an RFID. It includes protocols on the transfer of medical records between physicians, guidelines on the collection of medical and non-medical data for quality control, and new standards for codification. That was the GUDID, Global Unique Device Identification Database. A mandatory Obamacare RFID implant is a myth, but the chips aren't. RFID use will be something that we as a people will be discussing in the near future. Although they have a lot of potential for medical and safety benefits, they also pose risks to privacy, some which are illustrated below. Then it goes on to list, you know, the different pros and cons, and it says, it gives examples of the myth, and it even quotes scripture in here. But it does say about these myths. To reiterate, the chip is a myth completely made up and spread through chain emails. It says that the law, affordable healthcare law, does not make implementing RFID chips legal, but it does leave the door open for chips to be used for healthcare and data collection. Although Obamacare does not have a microchip implant mandate, these new wide range, the new smart devices have a wide range of potential for health data and patient information.
Okay, but I just logged on to my own healthcare, and this is kind of going twisting this a little bit. And if you're a member, for example, of various health groups, HMOs and such, and I just logged on to my own, I don't know, interface, health interface, where you can actually look up your test results, for example, your medications, your conditions.
You have an electronic health record page?
Well, yeah. Unfortunately or fortunately, but nonetheless. So I can see, okay, so yeah. I guess the reason I said that is because I can see now where this is can be integrated with.
And it can be integrated in many ways. There was a report to Congress in February of 2016 for the adoption of health information technology to facilitate the electronic use and exchange of health information. And this is an update to the Congress on the adaptation of a nationwide system no later than 2 years after this date. The Secretary of Health and Human Services shall submit an appropriate committees of jurisdiction to the House of Representatives and the Senate a report that describes the specific actions that will be taken by the federal government and private entities to facilitate the adoption of a nationwide system for electronic use and exchange of health information. Describes the barriers to the adaptation of such a nationwide system. Contains recommendation to achieve full implementation of a nationwide system.
Okay.
The Secretary of Health and Human Services submitted the report requested by Section 13.1.1.3 on January 17th, 2012. And it goes through the executive summary, the introduction, critical actions, progress updates, key barriers, the Health and Human Services efforts to gather and use these recommendations, and the conclusions. Now, if you look at the conclusion on this report, it says, in the 6 years since the High-Tech Act was enacted, the nation has seen dramatic advancement in the use and adaptation of health IT, or health technology.
Okay, we're getting close to the top or the end of the program, so let's kind of summarize this and then kind of intersect the lines here, because I don't want people to get too off confused.
Okay, priority actions over the next years will focus on continuing to build the economic case for interoperability on private public partnerships, ensuring the implementation of a robust policy with privacy and security protections. The nation needs an interoperable health system that empowers individuals to use their electronic health information
to the fullest extent.
Well, and this is part one. There's three parts.
Right.
You have part one, part two, and part three. Part three is what is mandatory January 1st, 2018. Part two is what we are in now. But what you are seeing is your health records, past and present, being changed to an electronic format.
What you're
not seeing is your real-time health records being put into an electronic format, meaning you're not seeing the results of a device implanted in you showing the doctors your real-time
but
blood pressure.
But we wouldn't have that. We're not going to see that.
You will see that. That is what the system is.
But you're going to tell me that the doctors are going to say, we're going to put a chip in you to monitor your health.
Absolutely. This precision medicine initiative is a way to explain it to people, I guess. And, you know, you talked about post-market surveillance, the surveillance system through medical devices. This is from back in 2012. It talks about using for communities to use these personal medical devices to facilitate new to fulfill the vision for the national security system. One, they wanted to establish the unique device identification system, and they did that to promote the development of a national device registry, to develop new methods for evidence generation. It's a key national and international security issue. Not only that, they're right. going to engage the public to be part of this. And it says that. This is a broad, patient-captured, real-world, scalable, and reusable infrastructure.
Okay, well, just stop there. Because
real-time analysis of data.
Okay, here's what we're going to have to do on this. We're going to have to really expose this well beyond anything we could do in the next 3 minutes before the end of the program. Folks, understand this. The surveillance of all of us is being conducted through our health, with the health system. This is why the Health Care Act had to be passed the way it was. Mm-hmm. There's talk about redoing the Health Care Act and even revoking it or, you know, repealing it. It's not going to happen. And if it is, a concurrent type of health, a plan will be in its place, but this does.
And don't forget the smart city.
Right. This all connects into the Internet of Things, as the emailer had said. So all of this is being pushed toward an electronic surveillance of every human across the planet, mm-hmm. in the United States, being at the epicenter, the healthcare system, but also the financial system, which I think would tie everything else together.
And starting in America.
Yeah. Yes.
America is, and it says it in the laws, it will start here, and it will start with incentivized pilot programs.
And here it is. And how long will this take? It's not going to take that long, as Joe had pointed out. We will do special and more coherent. Not that this wasn't, but more.
Well, it wasn't
more,
that coherent.
More focused, laser-like exposés on this, because we're seeing this take place right now. I logged in during the show on my own interface, my health interface, to check my records, and let me tell you. They're right there. They're online. And you might say, well, they've always been, you know, it's since the Internet but no, not to this extent. I'm talking about having blood drawn at 2 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning and getting the results at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's pretty interesting. I would encourage everybody to talk to their doctor and see if they, can find access to their own electronic health information.
And that's important.
Documents like this, monitoring progress towards universal health coverage at a country level and global levels. Why would the World Bank publish a paper?
The World Bank, and see, there is the overlap. The IRS, the enforcement, the World Bank, the major banks being at the epicenter as well.
Look at the President's Brain Initiative, the biometric initiative.
Yes.
He has... the executive order, one of the first ones he launched, in November 24th, 2009, where he says the intersection of scientific technology and human rights would intersect. What does that mean? It can only mean one thing.
Yes. You know what that is. All right. Before we close out the program, I got a couple of emails. One from a SWAT member of SWAT team. Another from a patrol officer. Please,
they're not on their way here, are they?
No. And they're friends. But please address the anti-Trump riots, protests. But you know what, folks? They're riots coming to a town near you, a city near you, a location near you. Orchestrated riots under the guise of ostensibly anti-Trump. Folks, 14 were arrested at a Trump rally in Anaheim today.
Was that today or yesterday?
Wednesday. Wednesday. You've got this visceral hatred of Donald Trump, which is interesting.
And it's his fault.
Deadly. And yeah, that's right. It's all blamed on Trump. And you've got Stephen King.
Oh, yeah.
Stephen King
leading
saying, yeah,
boycott of authors.
It's ridiculous. Never. Well, I mean, there you go. King saying Trump should, as a matter of conscience, basically, everyone should, as a matter of conscience, oppose Donald Trump. Folks, tomorrow, Ted Brower, thank you so much for tuning in to us tonight.
Have a great night.
This is the Global Star Radio Network. Breaking news.